Blog Talk Radio.
Definitely did. I'm on a miniature vacation this week from work. I needed some time off for me, so I took off. Today was my first day off, and I really enjoyed it. Just kind of bummed around the house looking for stuff, putting stuff up, and reorganizing my life as usual. As you know, my whole life is one journey after another, trying to find stuff to do, trying to put away stuff. And I'm always looking and doing things. I try to stay as busy as possible. Okay, we're back tonight again. This is Chocolate Lady, 64. And I'm here to finish our discussion on PTSD. Post-traumatic stress disorder. And I want to just reiterate what we talked about last week. We discussed last week PTSD and women. And we found out that women are more susceptible being able to handle PTSD as long as we have people around us that surround us with love and we can communicate with them, or even like people who've experienced, or for instance, and I keep talking about military because that's where I found, or that's where I kind of the PTSD happened for me. People that are like us. When I say like us, I mean people who been in the military, probably experienced that same type of drama, or trauma, that is. And it helps out because we have something in common. As I told you, I have suffered from it in the past. And we are supposed to talk about tonight suicide and PTSD, how it affects us when it comes to us feeling like we're at our wits' ends and we cannot do anything else and we can't handle anything else. As you know, we've lost a lot of our soldiers to suicide since the war began, and from my understanding, we're in our almost, what, 8th year, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong with that. But I'm thinking we're in our 8th year with this war. And because of that, we have lost a lot of our soldiers that are coming back. They're coming back depressed. They're coming back suicidal, which is definitely not good. And we're trying, and I know, and I can say this, I work at a veterans hospital, and I've noticed that they're trying to start making sure that PTSD is being, any soldier that's coming back who's requesting help, who's asking for help, that we're able to, we have the proper resources, we've increased our social workers, we've increased our doctors, our psychiatrists, our psychologists, to be able to deal with it. So right now for the Veterans Administration, they are making sure that they're getting, people are getting the proper help. Soldiers that are coming back are getting the proper help dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder, which I think is a great and bold step to help us to prevent so many suicides that are happening. You know, you're coming back from a situation where you no one, not to say people have ignored you or don't care about what you've gone through, but the ideal that you have gone through what you've gone through, and you do need the help. Excuse me. You do need the help. You do need someone there to let you know that you're not alone, that somebody is going to help you. So we want to discuss that tonight. As I said before, we kind of reiterated on women and how we handle it, and because it's always about the man and how the man deals with it, it's a little bit different for them opposed to when it comes to us. Sometimes it's hard for men to function as well as women, but we always gear toward, we always find ourselves gearing toward helping out the man, and we sometimes forget about the woman or the women in combat that actually has gone through that. And to some people, they saying, well, women shouldn't be in the military, or women shouldn't even take on the role to want to go that way. Well, I mean, I think we have a right to serve our country in any way that we can, just as well as the men do. So doesn't mean that it's fine that we're being, you know, persecuted for that, but we deserve the same type of help as the men do. And I can say now that the veteran hospitals are stepping up their game when it comes to with PTSD. I'm just trying to gather some more information so that I'm making sure I'm not being inaccurate of what I'm trying to tell you guys about PTSD and suicide. One of the questions that were asked was, does PTSD increase an individual's suicide risk? That could be a yes or no. It says a large body of research indicates that there is a correlation between PTSD and suicide. There is an evidence traumatic events such as sexual abuse, combat trauma, rape, and domestic violence really increases the suicide risk. Considerably, the base exists. However, about the reason for this increase, whereas some studies say that suicide risk is higher due to the symptoms of PTSD. Others claim that suicide risk is higher in these because of related psychiatric conditions. But some studies also say that they point to PTSD as the cause of a suicide suggestion. Suggestive levels of intrusive memories can predict the relative risk of suicide. It says high levels of arousal symptoms and avoidance have also been shown to predict suicide risk. In contrast, other researchers have found that co-occur with PTSD, such as depression, may be more predictive of suicide. Furthermore, some cognitive of coping, such as using suppression to deal with the stress, may be additionally predicted to suicide risk in with PTSD. Given the high rate of PTSD in veterans, considerable research has examined the relations between PTSD and this population. Multiple factors contribute to suicide risk in veterans. Some of the most common factors are male gender, alcohol abuse, family history of suicide, older age, poor social environmental support, exemplified by homelessness and unmarried status, possession of firearms, the presence of medical and psychiatric conditions, including combat-related PTSD, associated with this also. Currently, there is a debate about the exact influence of combat-related trauma on suicide risk. For those veterans who have PTSD as a result of combat trauma, however, it appears that the highest relative risk is in veterans who were wounded, multiple times or hospitalized for a wound. This suggests that the intensity of combat stress and the number of times it occurred may influence suicide risk in veterans with PTSD. Other research on combat-related PTSD suggests that the most sufficient predictor of both suicide attempts and with suicide is combat-related guilt. Many veterans experience highly intrusive thoughts and extreme guilty acts committed during times of war. These thoughts can often overpower the emotional coping capacities in veterans. Now, let's talk about the reasons for suicide, which I think is very interesting. What is the reason people commit suicide? I know you hear me rattling paper. I'm trying to get my facts together and make sure I got everything where I want it. Let's see here. Okay, reasons for suicide. Oh, shoot. Individuals who have lost someone to suicide often question why that person chose to end his or her life. Unfortunately, there is no easy answer to this question. Suicide often appears to be related to environmental stresses or traumatic events. But it's also the case that some individuals commit suicide without any ideal reason, no indefinite reason. Although survivors will always feel devastation and confusion when a loved one commits suicide, research may have survivors better understand some common reasons for suicide. Specific reasons for suicide as a diverse as the individual who committed. Nevertheless, there are some causal factors that appear to be related to suicide. For example, more than 90% of suicide victims have a psychiatric illness at the time of their death. These illnesses are often both undiagnosed and untreated. The most common psychiatric condition associated with suicide are mood disorders and substance abuse. Individual has both a mood disorder and a substance abuse issue, the risk of suicide is so much higher. This especially is in the case for adolescents and young adults. The research suggests that the presence of mental primary contributor to the cause of suicide for individuals who have suffered from clinical depression specifically concerned are those who exhibit open aggression, anxiety, and agitation as these factors significantly increase the matter of wanting to commit suicide. Now, also, researchers suggest that suicide can be understood as a type of coping mechanism for individuals overwhelmed and trapped by their situation. Now, for these people, suicide is seen as a way of dealing with strong negative emotions through escape. These conceptualization of suicide is exemplified by the relations of suicide following a suicide story of suicide rates and media coverage, particularly in the young. Research reveals that the magnitude of increased suicides following a suicide story is proportional to the amount, duration, and prominence of media coverage. Data suggests that suicide is more likely to occur when it is no longer perceived as taboo and instead a viable coping method for stress. This hypothesis of suicide as a coping device is further supported by evidence. Family history of suicide greatly increases an individual's suicide risk, regardless of the presence of their mental state. Now, there was an incident in our family where a relative of mine was not doing well, was very ill, and this person didn't have any kids, and her husband was dead already, had passed. And I was talking to another family member, and I mentioned it, or they mentioned it to me, and this family member was very derogatory or had a very negative answer for the idea that this relative of mine wanted to commit suicide. And I had to tell them and tell them to understand. You have to understand, this person is lonely. They've never had any kids. They've never had closeness with anybody other than their husband, and their husband is gone. And I had to tell this person, you have daughters, you have grandkids, you have all kinds of people that are around you as far as the support system, but this person didn't. So you can't call that person crazy because you're not walking in their shoes. You don't know how lonely they are. You don't know what they're going through. The best thing for you to do is to comfort them and support them, not tell them that they're crazy. You never do that to someone who wants to commit suicide. You comfort them. And I think the person might have taken it the wrong way because of the way it came out, but I was just so angry because you have to be crazy to want to commit suicide. That's the first thing comes out of people's mouth. When you shouldn't say that to someone. You have to understand their situation. You have to understand what they're going through. So, and when I explained that to them, that I think they kind of understood what I was saying about how important it is when you know you have a friend or a family member that wants to commit suicide, and they voiced it. They voiced it for a reason. They wanted help. They wanted you to say something. They wanted you to react to it. But when you react, be careful how you react because you can knock them over the edge. And then you feel guilty, like the article is saying. You start to begin to feel guilty about them committing suicide because you think you did something wrong. What you did, if you don't understand or if you don't try to learn how to handle people who's feeling that way. If you have a friend that's depressed and you don't know anything about depression, my first thing to do is to go look it up. Find out what depression is. Read all as much as I can about depression so that when I can go to that person and they tell me, oh, I'm feeling a little depressed, you can answer them. You don't sit up there and say, oh, you ain't got nothing to be depressed about. Some people just don't know how to handle when you come to them with a problem. They don't know how to handle that problem, and the first thing they're going to say, oh, you get through this. But you really don't understand, I need help. I'm telling you this because I need help. And we don't know the warning signs, and we don't pay attention to the warning signs. And really, to be honest with you, and it's not that I'm saying this how most people are, but a lot of people just, you know, hey, I got my own problems. I don't need yours. And they have that attitude, so they don't get involved in, oh, you know what, pat you on the back. Oh, it's going to be all right. Let's have coffee. Let's do lunch together. It's more to it than that. Yeah, I want you to support me, but I want you to tell me something that you know about what I'm going through, because obviously you don't. So learn your friends when they're telling you stuff. Listen to the warning signs. If they're not going anywhere, if they're staying locked up in the house, go get them. Get them out. Try to get them to think about positive stuff. Give them a reason to be here, you know. Give them a reason. And it's much harder on people, like I said, as the article explained, it's harder on a person who's homeless, who have problems with drugs, alcohol, family issues, all that stuff is going on in their life, and it's kind of hard for them. And then they feel like a failure because things are not going the way that you planned. And it's hard for us to adjust to trying to make things right because we're so overwhelmed with our depression and the bad times in our lives. It says, when trying to understand a suicide, some helpful questions to consider are, did the individual ever receive treatment for depression or another mental disorder? Did the individual have a problem with substance abuse? Did the individual have a history of suicide attempts? Did the individual have a family history of suicide attempts? Those are the questions you ask when you're talking to someone who's thinking about that. Suicide is a traumatic event. A considerable amount of research examines exposure to suicide as a traumatic event. So if you know somebody who committed suicide, that's traumatic for you. Studies show that from exposure to suicide can contribute to PTSD. In particular, adults and adolescents are more likely to have PTSD as a result of exposure to suicide if one or more of the following conditions are true. If they witness a suicide, if they are very connected with a person who dies, or if they have a history of psychiatric illnesses, relative to other traumatic events. There appears to be nothing unique about developing PTSD as a consequence, exposure to suicide. Studies do show, however, that traumatic grief is more likely to arise after exposure. Traumatic death, such as suicide, traumatic grief refers to a syndrome in which individuals experience impairment, a decline in physical health, and suicide ideations. These symptoms occur independent of other conditions, such as depression and anxiety. For more information about traumatic grief, they have a grief fact sheet that goes with this. I had never heard of that. I thought that was very interesting. Do you know anyone who committed suicide? And I'm not telling you to tell me the whole story, but, you know, I know somebody who committed suicide, and I wasn't very close to them, but I was close enough. And when we got the news, we were totally blown away with it. And it was during the time that we were in Saudi, and we were friends with these guys from Special Forces, and one of them that we were real good friends with committed suicide in his foxhole. So that right there was enough to to really kind of put the icing on the cake when it comes to being in a traumatic situation as far as being in Saudi during Desert Storm and Desert Shield. Let's see here. It says, while helping a suicidal person can be difficult, can be a difficult process, remember that the assistance you provide could save someone's life. That's why it's good to know a lot of stuff. Sometimes we find ourselves, and I'm not going to get off the subject, but we find ourselves being very closed-minded because it doesn't involve them. And when the event happens or the situation takes place, then we're like, oh, I didn't know. It's always so good to keep up. You know, I watch the news all the time, and that's all well and good because I learn from the news. But I also watch a lot of other stuff that's educational. I try to be a sponge. Even though I'm older in age and, oh, you know, we feel like we can conquer the world, we still have some shortcomings, and learning is something you never, ever stop doing. So I find myself reading a lot of stuff, and I find myself very interested in different things, different events, different situations. I find myself, you know, doing a little research on it because I love research and stuff. And it helps me to be knowledgeable of stuff because you never know. Somebody might come to you on the subject of dyeing your hair, how to dye your hair, the process, you know, should you do it or should you let your cosmetologist or your beautician do it? You know, and you don't, if you don't have answers to a lot of questions, then, you know, you feel like, to me, well, I can't say for everybody else, but for me, if I don't have answers to questions because I'm always being asked different things, I feel like I haven't done what I'm here to do, and that's to give people help, to kind of lead them in the right direction, to give them advice, to you know, just kind of keep being informative. Make it a duty for yourself. Make it part of you to be informative of things and being able to help people. So, because I know someone who has committed suicide, I can relate to that, and I can learn different ways of not wanting, for me, not wanting to commit suicide. Or others around me, I know how to guide them or tell them, you know, hey, this is something you should think about, you shouldn't think about. Let's go here, let's go talk about this, let's find out if we can get you some help or something. You know, I can do that because now I know what it was and how it happened and what steps to take. It says it's always difficult to cope with an acquaintance who commits suicide. Overcoming a suicide will be particularly challenging if you were emotionally close to the victim, if you witnessed the event, or if you have a prior psychiatric illness. Additional factors that complicate the grieving process include low socioeconomical status, social support. Grieving the loss of a loved one is a natural process. It may take several months to feel again after your acquaintance commits suicide. Due to the traumatic nature of the suicide, you may experience traumatic grief as a part of the healing process. If you experience pronounced levels of grief several months afterwards, contact a mental health professional for assistance. Lastly, many people experience intense guilt after the suicide of an acquaintance. This feeling is often related to the thoughts about being able to prevent the suicide of the acquaintance. The feeling is often related to thoughts about being unable to prevent the suicide if it's never, and it's never your fault. It is complicated and difficult phenomenon to understand. With many contributing factors to gain a better understanding of suicide or grieving process, make sure you get professional help. Talk to your doctor. Tell your doctor what you saw. how it bothered you so that he can get you help. Because if your doctor don't know, then your doctor can't help you. And it's best to keep your doctor informed on everything you do. Okay, let's see here. Give me one second here. I'm trying to do something here. Okay. Now, the next question is, what can I do? Am I suicidal? What an interesting question to ask. Can you be suicidal? Can you be suicidal? Do you believe you can be suicidal? Everyone feels down occasionally, according to this. Says, everyone feels down occasionally. Feeling suicidal, however, is not normal. If you have thoughts about hurting yourself, it is important to seek professional help. Many people who experience suicidal thoughts also struggle with mood disorder or substance abuse problems. If you think you may have one of these conditions, there are places to seek help. For conditions such as PTSD, depression, or substance abuse, helpful treatments include medication from a primary care physician or a psychiatrist and therapy from a mental health provider such as a psychologist. In order to locate a mental health provider, best thing to do is talk to your primary care provider and allow them to get you some help. If you work for a large company or organization, they have resources. And also make sure that they have resources such as mental health that will help employees with their problems, because most places do provide that service, or they can make referrals. Also, there is a number, if you feel unsafe and you feel like you want to and you consider suicide, the number is 1-800-273-8255. I'm going to repeat that number. If you feel like you want to commit suicide or you have it on your mind or you thought about it, a number to seek help is 1-800-273-8255, and if you speak Spanish, it's 1-888-628-9454. Let me repeat that number again, 1-800-273-8255 if you speak English, and if you speak Espanol, it's 1-888-628-9454. If you do not struggle with a psychiatric illness, you may need to learn additional coping strategies for alleviating your stress. There are many therapeutic treatments that could be helpful in this situation. Consider using one of them, one of the methods mentioned above, to locate a mental health professional near you. Now, someone I know is suicidal. It is likely that sometime during your life you will be exposed to a family member, peer, or a coworker who is suicidal. Excuse me. I am so sorry, you guys. I feel like I'm getting sleepy, but I'm really not. I'm just yawning a lot. Okay. It is likely that sometime during your life you will be exposed to a family member, peer, or coworker who is suicidal. When someone discloses information about feeling suicidal, the information can be overwhelming, provoking, and frightening. This is particularly true if the disclosure is made in confidence and you feel you need to share the information with others. If someone you know is thinking about suicide, the issue should be taken very, very seriously. Individuals who contemplate suicide may see how it fits. May not necessarily take action, but evaluating the risk can be complicated and should be done by a qualified mental health professional. That means that you cannot psychoanalyze that person, that you need to make sure that person gets help. You need to seek help for that person or make sure that they're getting the help that they need. And again, I want to say that number again because my job as helping anyone who wants to commit suicide is to get them to the right people. Helping a suicidal individual can be a difficult process. A person's age will influence your first course of action. Your acquaintance is an adult. Try to be supportive and listen to his or her concerns. Next, encourage that person to seek treatment immediately. Help the person with the process by remaining calm and providing the help. Providing information, mental health options in the area. Again, I will say that number again. It's 1-800-273-8255. 1-800-273-8255. This number is a very important number. And I'm trying to find my highlighter so I can make sure I highlight it and keep up with it. And if you speak en español, it is also 1-888-628-9545. No, let me say that again. 1-888-628-9454. Often the most difficult part of obtaining treatment is the initial call to a mental health professional. It is easier for a suicidal individual to accept professional help if they have assistance with this part of the process. Decision to seek treatment is typically voluntary for the adult. You cannot do it for them. They have to want to do it. Their ability to maintain safety will determine treatment options. Options include outpatient therapy, medication management, and inpatient therapy. Hospital visits are very typical, only prescribed when an individual is no longer safe without supervision. Some involuntary hospital admissions is necessary. However, because of the federal laws protecting adult civil rights, course of action is very uncommon. Involuntary admission only occurs when an individual demonstrates unsafe course of action in an uncommon, involuntary admission only occurs when an individual demonstrates unsafe acts. If you feel that your acquaintance may hurt him or herself or others, contact your local police department, okay? If a person with suicidal thoughts is a minor under the age of 18, it is important to contact the minor's legal guardian. If the caregiver is unwilling or unable to take action, contact a mental health professional, enforcement agent for assistance. Oh, they have a mental health professional enforcement agent. Didn't know that. United States federal law states that individuals under the age of 18 can't make mental health treatment decisions. Therefore, it is important that the responsible adult see that the minor is able to get to these services. Treatment options for children and adolescents are similar to those outlined for adults. But unlike adults, however, minors may receive inpatient hospitalization without their consent, evidence deemed by their parents or the legal system. Okay. And very interesting information. Very good information. And I think I'm going to use this information again, if possible. Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about post-traumatic stress disorder primary suicide risk factor for veterans. Researchers working with the Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans have found that post-traumatic stress disorder, the current most common mental disorder among veterans returning from service in the Middle East, is associated with increased risk for thoughts of suicide. Results of the study indicated that veterans who screened positive for PTSD were four times more likely to report suicide-related thoughts relative to veterans without the disorder. The research published in Journal of Traumatic Stress established that PTSD as a risk factor for thoughts of suicide in the Iraq and Afghanistan war. This holds true even after accounting for other psychiatric disorder diagnoses such as substance abuse and depression. Veterans who screened positive for PTSD are two of the more common comorbid disorder, mental disorders, were significantly more likely to experience thoughts of suicide relative to veterans with PTSD alone. As many as 46% of veterans in the study experienced suicidal thoughts or behaviors in the month prior to seeking care, and of those veterans, 3% reported an actual attempt within the 4 months prior to seeking the care. Suicide-related thoughts and behaviors discovered in a returning veteran who has been diagnosed with PTSD, especially in the presence of other mental disorders, may suggest an increase of risk for suicide. Okay. Let's see here. Good information. Let's see what we got here. Why is it so hard for us to recover from being suicidal? Okay, this says combat veterans, sexual assault survivors, and other victims of trauma are vulnerable to the condition called post-traumatic stress disorder. I said that all wrong. Let me repeat what I just said. Combat veterans, sexual assault survivors, and other victims of trauma are vulnerable to a condition called post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. People with PTSD suffer from a range of symptoms that interfere with their capacities to enjoy a normal life. People who suffer suicidal conditions, particularly conditions that were chronic, recurrent, or included one or more attempts, may also be victims of PTSD. According to its definition, PTSD may result when a person suffers an event or situation that is outside the range of normal experience, exceeds the individual's perceived ability to meet its demand, and possess a serious threat to the loss of life. Suicidal people meet the formal criteria for PTSD. Severe and prolonged suicidal pain is not something that most people suffer. People in suicidal crisis feel that they are at the breaking point of what they can cope with. Since 30,000 people die by suicide each year in the United States, it is a condition that poses a serious threat to the loss of life. Many of us are haunted by memories of acute crisis, acts of self-injury, or extended periods of severe depression. Like citizens of a besieged city, we lived through periods of time in which we had a realistic and unrelenting fear that we would soon be dead. We suffer PTSD simply from having been suicidal. Independently of whatever particular traumas may have contributed to our becoming suicidal, such as an abuse during childhood or exposure to the violent death of someone else, our suicide, PTSD, is often distinctive from whatever traumatic event may happen as a result of being suicidal, such as involuntary hospitalization or job discrimination. Undoubtedly, most of us suffer many types of trauma events in our life. And these events and their consequences need to be addressed in recovery, but the suicidal crisis there themselves may be events that include the PTSD. The PTSD literature for veterans and sexual assault survivors lists conditions that are commonly found among survivors of those types of trauma. Survivors typically have have only some of these symptoms, and the severity of a particular symptom may vary from individual to individual. Survivors of different types of traumatic events often have a different range of symptoms. A remarkably large number of these conditions are common among people in long-term histories of suicidal pain. Problems with memory, persistent, intrusive, and vivid memories concerning the traumatic situation. Events of daily life may trigger distressing memories related to the trauma. Memory lasts for parts of the traumatic situation. Many suicidal people are troubled by strong images, such as the feeling that they have bombs inside their bodies or a knife over their heads, and in recovery continue to be bothered by the memory of having had these images. Sometimes some things come back to me, and I try to find ways to deal with it. And I think we discussed this in another part of PTSD. Avoidance of things associated with the traumatic experience. Denial on the seriousness of the experience. Persistent anxiety. Fear that the traumatic situation will reoccur. The trauma is often an event that shatters the survivor's sense of invulnerability to harm. Disturbed by the intrusiveness of violent impulses and thoughts. Engagement in risk-taking behavior to produce adrenaline. A feeling of being powerless over the traumatic event, anger and frustration over being powerless, a feeling of being helpless about one's current condition, being dramatically and permanently changed by the experience, a sense of unfairness, why did this happen to me, holding oneself responsible for what happened, feeling guilty, the use of self-blame to provide an illusion of control. Sexual assault survivors often blame themselves. If I hadn't been at that location, worn those clothes, behaved in that way, then it wouldn't have happened. This pattern is also found in survivors of a completed suicide. If I had only done X, the suicide would have not happened. Could be used to try to cope with the fear that the suicide will happen again in the family, i.e., it is preventable. If I just managed these things differently. The suicidal are often full of self-blame. As in the other cases, it is partly due to an internalization of social attitudes that blame the victim or family, and also due to the effort to gain mastery over the situation. To imagine we could have done more is more tolerable than totally helplessness. And in the inability to experience the joys of life, feelings of being alienated from other people in society in general. I am different. I am shameful. If they knew what I was like, they would reject me. I don't belong in this world. I'm a freak, an outcast. When people with PTSD try to return to normal life, they are plagued by readjustment problems in the basic elements of life. They have difficulties in relationship, in employment, and in having families, a lack of caring attachments, a sense of lack of purpose and meaning. Some chronologically traumatized people lose the sense that they have a self at all. Veterans report the feeling that they never really made it back from the war. Formerly suicidal, people feel they never really made it back to normal life. One Vietnam vet with PTSD said, "I don't have any friends, and I am pretty particular about who I want as a friend." PTSD was aggravated for Vietnam veterans because they returned to a country that had negative attitudes toward them. For sexual assault survivors, stigmatism is at the second injury. When Vietnam veterans returned home, people were angry at them. They had shamed the country. They had done something wrong. They were potentially harmful to others. It was dangerous to be with them. Sexual assault survivors may receive angry responses on the grounds that they have done something that shames the family. Suicide attempters often experience great anger. From family and care providers, a deep distrust of coworkers, employers, authorities, left with unexpressed rage against those who were indifferent to their situation and who failed to help them. In personal relationships, there are problems of dependency and trust, a fear of being abandoned, betrayed, let down, a belief that that people will be hurtful if given a chance, feelings of self-hatred and humiliation for being needy, weak, and vulnerable, alternating between isolation and anxious clinging. Whew! All these emotions going through a person who wants to commit suicide. This is a lot. Whew. Trauma often causes the victim to view the world as malevolent rather than benign. No sense of having a future or the belief that one's future will be very limited. Feel that they belong more to the dead than to the living. The feeling of having a negative Midas touch, everything I get involved with goes bad. Loss of self-confidence and loss of feelings of mastery and competence. A resistance to efforts to change a maladaptive world view that results from the trauma. A mistrust of counselors' ability to listen. People who suffered traumatic experiences, children, teenagers, or young adults may systematically become prematurely aged and developmentally arrested. A part of them feels old. Another part feels stuck at the age they had when the trauma occurred. It says PTSD can be worse if the sufferer experienced the trauma as an individual rather than as a member of a group of people who are suffering the same situation. Unlike earlier wars in which units went overseas together and returned together, in Vietnam each soldier had an individual DROS, date of expected return from overseas. This reduced unit cohesiveness. Each soldier experienced the war from an individual point of view. Suicidal people experience their near-death situations with extreme isolation. They see their conditions as being completely unique, terminal uniqueness. They have no sense of identification with others. The severity of PTSD symptoms tend to increase with the severity of duration and the trauma. The use of alcohol or drugs to cope with the PTSD symptoms, attempts to do things to gain a feeling of mastery over the traumatic situation, or become a volunteer on a hotline. These kind of conditions may be found again and again in the chronological suicidal. Upon reflection, it should not be surprising that we should suffer PTSD. Many of us suffered from suicidal pain for years and years and years and years. The ideal of dying is terrifying. We recoil at the thoughts of dying by automobile accidents, plane crash, murder, cancer, AIDS, drowning, suffocation. The idea of dying violently simply by forces generated from within ourselves is in some ways always too horrible to apprehend. How could anyone survive such a prolonged sledge of pain and terror and remain unaffected? Very interesting. We can complete the rest of this next Thursday because we're still talking PTSD, and I think that'll be my last thing on PTSD next week, next Thursday. Getting my paperwork together for next week. I think this stuff was very interesting, and I learned more about it, and the symptoms, I couldn't do it. I couldn't think about all these things these people go through with that and how important and how serious PTSD is. And because we don't know a person's personal struggles, we are people that, it's not that we have thin skin, it's that we are able to look at things and not let it affect us. But nowadays, because you look at the recession, people losing their jobs, losing their families, losing, you know, your means, we need to step up as supporting friends and family members and get them help that they need. Suggest somebody to them, you know, pray with them, you know. Sometimes people think prayer is not enough. Go and get you some help from a professional. I would like to repeat those numbers again. for anybody out there who's not thinking of it, or you know someone who's thinking of it, the phone number is 1-800-273-8255. Speaking English, Espanol is 1-888-628-9454. Please, if you can, write those numbers down. Keep those numbers close. And then maybe there might be a time when you can help somebody with this. I'm hoping everyone will have a great week, the rest of the week. Tomorrow is Friday. And I will be talking with you guys again next week. You know you can hit me up on ChocolateLady.blogtalkradio.com. ChocolateLady64. You can catch me on Facebook, Salita McCall. I'm on Facebook. Drop me a line. Join my page. I haven't been Twittering lately, and I've gotten people that's been following me, but I hadn't been Twittering. I got so much other stuff I'm doing in the process, so I don't want to get overwhelmed with a lot of stuff. We will be continuing this conversation next week. We're going to conclude it, and we're going to talk about PTSD in family and how it affects the family. I hope everyone got something out of the PTSD and suicide and how they correlate with the symptoms. I'm hoping you, if you haven't listened to my show live, that you go back and listen to it. I'm inviting you guys to come out and listen to what I'm saying. Please leave me comments, questions, whatever. I'm here. I want you guys to have a great evening. This is Chocolate Lady 64 at Blog Talk Radio, and I want to say good night, and I love you. Bye-bye.